If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's going on? It's Metal Shop. Metal Shop Backstage Pass here. Talking with Frank Novanek from Hatebreed, a.k.a. Frank Three Gun. Did I pronounce your last name right?
Oh, you did. But it's funny, Three Gun, because these days I go by Florida Frank. But and that's funny. That's an old nickname. And somebody asked me in an interview the other day, actually. They're like, how did you go from Frank Three Gun to Florida Frank? But that's a whole nother story.
Fair enough.
But life's good. Considering, obviously everything that's going on with the pandemic and us not being able to be on the road, but it's good to be home, which I'm usually not a lot. And obviously the record just came out and all that, so.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about your record, but speaking of records, you mentioned off the air right when we jumped on the call that you have a record store now. Why don't you tell me a little bit about being, the founder of a new record store and whatnot? What's it called and how's it been going?
It's funny. I'm a big record collector. Yeah. I listen to all different kinds of music, and I have thousands of records in my collection. And I have this little weird record store by my house that I kind of just, it's in this rundown plaza, and it just looks so bad that I was like, you know what? That place is probably so terrible. And I drove by here 100 times and never stopped in, and it's literally 2 miles from my house. And there was this cheesesteak place in the plaza that was next door to it. So one day my wife and I went to go get food. And I said, you know what? Let me pop my head in this record store real quick.
Yeah.
And I popped my head in there, and it was like 4 times the size of what I thought it would be. And it just had all these records in here, but it needed a lot of TLC and all that stuff. And since that day, I've been speaking with the owner, and I've been in here, and it's became, I've kind of inherited with him, and breathed some new life into this place. And,
oh, cool.
Really kind of gave it some TLC and put a lot of stuff in here and some money into here, and then we're advertising stuff. So it wasn't something I planned on, but, timing wise, since there's not a lot going on as far as touring is concerned, it's nice to be able to do something that's still related to music and that I enjoy doing. And the store is called Gruff's Vinyl.
Cool.
And it's in Rockledge, Florida. And if you're ever in Central Florida, it's over here on the Space Coast where we live. And come check it out.
Dude, that's awesome. It's cool. It's like you're putting time into this passion of records that you love, but it's also like a different side of it too. It's not just, organizing your own collection. It's like making something rad that could, form a community for people to come and enjoy it.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, it's just, it's fun, it's more than anything. Like, I could have obviously got involved in something to take up my time, since, we kind of quit touring long before the pandemic because the last album had been out so long. And, I could have jumped into doing something that I didn't care to do, just to make money while I'm home or keep myself busy.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a blessing. I mean, I've dumped more money into it than I've made, for sure, but I'm thinking long term here. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, man. That's really cool to hear. So, my question was going to be, how are you staying sane during this time? But it sounds like that's really the kind of thing that's keeping you going, keeping you sane.
It is, and I enjoy being home. I'm down here in Florida. I live far away from the rest of the guys. They're all in Connecticut, and Matt's up in Poughkeepsie, New York, about an hour from the rest of them. But I enjoy my life down here. We're outside all year because the weather's nice. And, I live by the ocean, and my wife and I get out and kayak, and we're big Disney people. So I'm always doing stuff, keeping myself busy when I'm off the road, even if it's stuff that I don't want to do, like yard work and stuff like that. There's no shortage of stuff to do. I'm definitely a lot more busy when I'm home than when I'm on the road.
Wow. Okay. What has been your experience so far? I mean, this isn't nobody's I don't know how to really frame this, but what's been your experience releasing an album during the most insane time in the history of the world?
Well, I mean, numbers-wise, I guess we'll find out today since it's been out a week now.
Yeah.
But, you know, from what I saw so far, you know, people are enjoying it. And I guess the timing's great because there's nothing else going on.
Yeah.
Why not hit people up with some music? Some people, obviously, are a lot more cautious about things, and you know, those people are the ones staying home more, so they need new music. And as far as, you know, our fans go, they all need a new Hatebreed record because it's been 4 years.
So yeah,
I feel like even though this record was supposed to drop in in May, and we had to we had to push it back 6 months. You know, we feel like that was kind of a blessing after the original shock of, hey, it's not going to come out in May. I kind of feel like it was a blessing because, you know, when we do end up getting back on the road, the record is going to be 6 months fresher than it would have been, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think people have kind of adjusted their lives to what this reality is. So it's a little bit more normal to release an album now, as opposed to the first few big metal albums that were coming out right as the pandemic started, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, so I'm curious about, what's the songwriting approach? 'Cause you guys, you said you live in Florida, other members live in Connecticut, someone lives in Poughkeepsie. Do you guys get together to write songs, or is there like a main songwriter who like sends like riff ideas to each of you guys, and how does that work typically?
Well, Jamie and Chris, who are both in Connecticut and have been in the band since day one,
yeah,
they're the sole music writers.
Oh, okay.
So you know, they're bouncing ideas off of each other via the computer now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, you know, and emails and stuff. So it's not until, you know, a lot, you know, programming drums and all that, and getting the meat and potatoes, if you will, of the song, the root, together, until the band can get together to you know, play them or make them actually become something.
Absolutely, man. That sounds like a good process. You guys got it figured out. Okay, so you said like you're a huge fan of all kinds of different music, and being a record collector, I'm sure you have all kinds of stuff. I listened to Jamie Joss's podcast, you know, and he talks a lot about your love of Kiss. I'm curious, have you ever like tinkered with the idea of trying to like add that stuff to Hatebreed, or are you just kind of like, no, Hatebreed is Hatebreed, I'll do my on the side? But you ever think like, maybe I'll add a prog part or like a dance part?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, in my prior bands, Terror and Ringworm and Integrity, the bands that I've been in the past prior to Hatebreed,
yeah,
and a lot of those bands, I wrote like 90% of some of those albums that were made, especially with Integrity and Ringworm. So coming into Hatebreed, you know, it's a different formula,
yeah,
and it's been working for 26 years, and I choose not to you know, put my spin on it, you know, and trust in Chris and Jamie with the writing process. So, but that's the beauty of it. You know,
yeah,
what I mean? If people knew what Matt and I were up drinking and listening to on the bus as it was rolling at 2 o'clock in the morning, they would be pretty shocked. You know what I mean? But that's, you know, that's the nice thing about it, is to have the yin to the yang, and being around the heavy music all day, at the shows and the tours, and then getting on the bus and listening to ELO or some 70s soft rock or something like that, you know?
Okay, well, let me ask you about that then, personally. Like, what's one album that you love that metalheads would be like, whoa, the guy from Hatebreed likes, you know, Sade or Selena or something? What's one album in your collection that you love but people might be a little bit, like, surprised by?
There's a lot. There's a lot of records, and I always kind of joke about, you know, when people talk about guilty pleasures of, you know, music and stuff, there's no such thing, really. Mm-hmm. You like what you like, and you can't ridicule anybody for music that they like. You know what I mean?
Yep.
People listen to it. It's out there for us to enjoy. And the beauty of it is that, you know, once you really have dug into it, you find yourself listening to all different kinds of stuff. I luckily for me, I was introduced to music at a very, very, very young age. My parents were drug addicts, alcoholics, and as much as that, that's frowned down upon, one positive thing that came out of all that was the music was always loud when I was a kid.
Okay.
It was always prominent. You know, the story that my father always tells me is, you know, when Smoke on the Water came out, that when every time that song came on, you would dance with in your diapers and hold on to my tower sneakers. And I'm like, all right, you know, and doing homework in that, it's like, all right, well, Deep Purple Machine Head came out in 72, and I was born in late 71, so I'm like, man, that totally makes sense. So,
yes.
Long story short, I mean, I listen to everything. I mean, when I'm down here tailgating at NASCAR and college football games, there's nothing I would rather listen to than, you know, my Jason Aldean and Kenny Chesney playlist.
Okay.
You know, that's what that vibe is.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm driving around in my truck since Thanksgiving, it's nothing but Christmas music.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, it's just, it depends on what I'm feeling at the time. I listen to country music, mostly old. You know, I don't like a whole lot of the newer stuff, but
sure,
there's some of it that I do love. There's some artists I do enjoy, Alan Jackson, and I think a lot of people would be shocked by that. I think that, and also bummed out about that as well.
Dude, I think it's awesome.
But you know, I like 90s hip hop, a lot of West Coast gangster rap. And,
yeah.
I enjoy like Bobby Darin and Bobby Vinton and,
okay,
and Dean Martin and Tom Jones. And when my wife and I are cooking, which is another thing I love to do, I do about 99% of that.
That's awesome.
In our house. And, you know, when I'm doing that and cooking and we're having dinner, I'll listen to that kind of stuff. So, and it's just great to you know, to leave home and go get out on the road and plug the Les Paul in and play the heavy, heavy riff,
mm-hmm,
and get the fix of that stuff. I can't complain. Music's a wonderful thing, and it's about a feeling, and it's about the way it makes us feel, more than anything, really.
That's awesome, man. It's really cool to hear. Like, you're right. That's a huge spectrum of stuff, and it's really cool to hear. And now I'm curious about, you said you grew up in this household with just like awesome, all these, you know, gateways to all this awesome rock and roll coming out and stuff. And from such a young age, you said your pants to Smoke on the Wall. That's hilarious. Diaper.
Yes.
What was your light bulb moment that made you think, like, I need to do this? I'm not just going to be someone who listens to this. I want to be a part of this. Was it, you know, hardcore or punk or 70s rock? What was the light bulb moment to become a guitarist?
Well, my journey always was, you know, when my parents were partying a lot, and I'm glad that they got their acts together and, mm-hmm, you know, they divorced and all that. But, you know, thank you. The world's a much safer place that my father doesn't drive. But, you know, when I saw Kiss as a young kid growing up in the 70s, as many did, it kind of just changed my life, because when you're a kid, you can't comprehend that these guys are human beings. You think that they're monsters or superheroes or something, because you're 6 or 7 years old,
yeah,
and you're staring at the cover of Destroyer and Love Gun. You have to, you know, and I understand a lot of younger people think that Kiss is nonsense and, you know, it's a joke and all that, but like, you have to put yourself in the shoes of a 6 and 7 year old kid,
yeah,
who's holding the cover of Destroyer and looking at it, and then, you know, you see these comic books and this movie on television with them, you think that they're not people. You know what I mean? You think that they're monsters or superheroes. Like, you're borderline scared of them, but
yeah,
you love it. So, it cut to me being 8 years old, and me and the kids in the neighborhood have the makeup on and the tennis rackets and Kiss Alive 2's on, and we're putting on a concert for, like, our parents.
So, yeah.
You know,
that's awesome.
And that's what you want to do and be. But as I got older, you kind of realize that that's, you know, once I got into my teens, and I got a guitar and started playing, you kind of almost realize that it's a one in a million thing to be able to make a music off living. And I thought I was going to get into cooking and become a chef. And that was what I was going to do in my life. But, you know, here I am, find myself playing in these hardcore bands in the late 80s, and it actually rolled and turned into something, which was a complete blessing because, as like I said, I mean, who gets to do that for a living? So here I am, however many years later, doing this. And I do spend my time in the kitchen when I'm home cooking. And I think about, you know, I probably would hate to cook at home if that's what I had to do at work for a living. I wouldn't want to come home and do it again.
So, well, you always hear about the like high-class chefs who like make these amazing like 10-course meals and then come home and eat like a cheeseburger from McDonald's, you know?
And that's it, you know, and I'm kind of happy that that's how it all panned out. I mean, obviously, I'm very happy in the position I am being an apried.
Yeah.
But as far as the cooking and all that's concerned, it's like, you know, I have the time when I'm home to do that while my wife's at work and get into some big project in the kitchen and spend all day like prepping and cooking and making stuff. And I, like I said, I just don't think if you know, I was doing that all day, I'd want to come home and do that. And aside from that, you know, you start thinking about how long is the band going to go and all that and what I would want to do post-tape read. And, you know, that was something I still would consider. But at the same time, now that the record store is going, I'm kind of hoping that we can continue in that and I can still enjoy, you know, the cooking at home and stuff like that.
So that's awesome, man. You're kind of setting it up for the future, and that's really cool to hear.
Well, you know, I hope that the band goes forever, and I don't see us stopping anytime soon. As long as these guys want to do it, I'll do it. I think about Vinny Stigma from Agnostic Front. Oh. Turned 65 years old yesterday.
Oh, so that's awesome.
65, and they're out there doing it. And then, of course, you have bands like, you know, not to compare ourselves to the Rolling Stones, but, you know, we're not filling stadiums or anything like that. But as far as age is concerned, you know, as long as the people still come to see our band, whether they're moshing in wheelchairs and stuff like that, I don't know. But, you know, I guess the future will hold to see how long we can continue to do this. But, you know, we do have a brand new record out, and that's something, and that will carry us into the next few years. So,
I mean, I saw last year, I saw Judas Priest and Uriah Heep, and both bands kicked total ass.
Yeah, I wanted to make it out to that tour, but and seeing how old are those original members that are in those bands.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, just crazy that they're still out there.
And the Scorpions.
And yeah, them too as well. And I'm super, super psyched that Mickey D, you know, ended up being in that band. And, you know, after Motorhead ended, even though I know he's not Filthy and not an original guy, but still cool to see. You know, I followed him since King Diamond, but it's cool that he ended up being with them. And that, they, you know, they spoke so much about calling it quits, and that didn't end up being the case. So it's good. I mean, these bands are giving us music. You know, these guys could retire a long time ago, and here they are, and as old as they are, and I think people really need to appreciate it, you know.
So being influenced by Kiss, you know, at a young age, I'm wondering where the pivot was to like underground, really abrasive hardcore, because I'm a big fan of your earlier bands too, Ringworm, Hatebreed, Ringworm, Terror, Integrity. I'm curious, where was kind of the pivot there, and what got you into the more underground, fierce hardcore stuff?
Well, I think that because I was into music at such an early age, and you're digging and finding stuff, and as a young kid growing up in the 80s, something that comes along that's more extreme than something that you thought was the most extreme, scrap.
Yep.
So really, it was me being into bands like Queensryche and Wasp, and then finding out about those college radio and recording college radio shows, and that's what led me to Motorhead, Slayer, Voivod, Celtic Frost, Venom. Those were the bands that I would go see in the 80s when it was around 1985, and I just would go see Possessed and Dark Angel came through town, and Venom, Slayer, Exodus. I was 14 and 15 years old, and I was super impressionable by this stuff, and then I found skateboarding, and that led to Suicidal Tendencies and Toxic Fraud, and that turned into, you know, the Vice Squad and Peter and the Test Tube Babies and all that crap.
Yeah.
While still loving Kiss through all this stuff, even after they took off the makeup and everything, I still kind of held on to that and classic rock, which mm-hmm. really, you know, more than anything, my number one go-to. I mean, you know, my favorite bands are Blue Oyster Cult and Kiss and the Stones. I still always loved that stuff, even though I was finding this other music, you know, this new music to me. And that's how my journey led me to, you know, starting Ringworm in high school. We started Ringworm in high school, James and I. James, who sings for Ringworm, yeah. who a lot of you know as
Human Furnace.
He's my best friend since middle school. You know, we graduated together. We started Ringworm in our senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And I'm still speaking with him. He was best man at my wedding last year. So
that's awesome.
You know, that's pretty much my journey as far as the music scene and getting into these different genres and what has led me to where I am now.
Shout out to, I believe his name is Bill Baker. I think he put out the first Ringworm record. Is that right?
Yeah, he did. From Vision Records, Seattle, yep. And you know, we had ties because Integrity had Overkill Records and
with Ron.
Heath Ron.
Yeah,
to Ron
Gardapi.
And, you know, and I've always been a huge fan of the bands up there, Brotherhood and The Accused. And I love Tad. I think they're one of the they're one of the most underrated bands ever. And I used to go watch them play all the time. And I really dug on a lot of the early Sub Pop stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the Fluid, even though I know that they're from Denver and they were one of the first non Seattle Sub Pop bands. But you know, we're no strangers to the scene up there, and
that's awesome.
And a lot of those bands. So
cool, man. Well, I'm curious about, and this is going to be putting you on the spot, but I'm curious with your bands that you wrote for. So you know, in Ringworm, Terror, what do you think is the hardest riff you personally ever wrote?
I think that, like, my shining moment was probably Ringworm Birthus Pain record.
Oh, yes.
Because I produced the record also.
Hell yeah.
And I also wrote 90% of it. It'd be hard to top a song like Madness of War.
Oh,
I think I was kind of, it was very hard to make that transition from that early Ringworm record to where we could barely play our instruments or tune our guitars. It's almost like the Germs. It's like you see the early footage of them playing like in the Decline of Western Civilization, mm-hmm. and it's like, man, they can't even think about playing. And it's like, and then you listen to the GI record that Joan Jett produced, and it's like magic.
Yeah.
And I feel like that transition is like comparable with Ringworm, because when you listen to the first Ringworm record, although it's heralded as this masterpiece and way ahead of its time, and we were just couldn't really tune. We weren't the best players. And then when the band kind of got back together after Integrity had fizzled out, with me being in it, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to get Ringworm back together. We're going to sign to Victory Records, and we're going to create this newer, updated version of the band.
Yeah.
That was really it. So, that kind of was like a shining moment for me. That and even the record after, which I wrote the majority of the songs for, which is Justice Replaced by Revenge.
Dude, that song still, I saw Ringworm last year. That song goes off, man. People could be just standing there kind of just, you know, hanging out, singing along a little bit. And then that song comes on and there's just instant, you know, people just fighting the invisible ninja, like, very
yeah, you know what's funny about that song is that I remember writing that song, and it was written on the spot at practice in like 2 seconds, and that's the least amount of time it's ever taken me to come up with a song. And we never go to practice and write songs. It's always bringing riffs to, you know, back in those days anyway, bringing the riffs to rehearsal, being uh-huh. I got a song, I got some riffs, let's work it out. That one was written on the spot, and it's crazy, it ended up being a song that people love. It was the title track of the record. So but kudos to them, man. They're still doing it, and
yeah.
still out there. And I think they tour more than we do now. So,
absolutely, dude. Yeah,
it's crazy to think, because you know Ringworm wasn't really a touring band when mm-hmm. I was involved in it.
It's cool, man, and you have quite the legacy, man. But you know, the new album Weight of the False Self is available now on Nuclear Blast Records. Pick it up. You can order it through Nuclear Blast. You can order it through Hatebreed website and everything. But my last question for you, Frank, if you could pick a scar on your body and tell us the story quickly, if you can, or, you know, about how you got the scar.
I have two holes in my shin, and when I was a young teenager, I was in the BMX like a lot of kids in the 80s were.
Oh yeah, and rad.
I used to, you know, before skateboarding, I was into that. And for those that remember, they had these pedals. They were made by Hutch. They were called Bear Trap pedals, and that's exactly what they were. And they're gnarly, and they have these spikes on them. And when you're wearing your Vans, those spikes kind of fit right in the holes in the body of your Van, and you literally are like glue on those things. And
Jesus,
That's what they're for. So I don't know why, but I just was. I had a GT bike back then, and I had like the Bear Trap pedals, and I was standing up, like, you know, on the back wheel with the top wheel in the air, and like jumping up in the air, like bunny hopping, and like for whatever reason, my feet slipped those pedals, and that free wheel flung back at about 100 miles an hour and went right into my shin. And I just remember throwing that bike in the ground and running home, pretty much doing everything I could to not cry and being like, oh my God, I never felt anything like that in my life. And the two holes in my shin are there still to this day from that. And that must have been 14 when I was 14 years old, and I'm 50 next year. So there you go.
Jesus, that's super brutal, but I mean, a cool story.
It is, for sure. It's cool. It's like people are like, what the hell is that? I'm like, you never believe. But that, you know, that's when we grew up riding BMX. I used to race BMX. I cracked my ribs doing all that. Skateboarding, I definitely got stitches in my face and, you know, broke my leg. I actually broke my leg after one of our concerts. But I broke my arm skateboarding. Yeah, I had a lot of injuries in my life. So
someone needs to start a BMX themed thrash band called Bear Trap and just all about the brutal injuries.
Man, that is a great idea. You know? It's funny. I always had this idea that Randy from Lamb of God and my friend Nate from Converge, that we were going to start this 80s skate rock band, you know. But the problem was, I was never that good at skateboarding. I loved the culture. I tried like hell. I just sucked at it. And luckily, the music came calling. But these guys are so f-ing good at skateboarding. And they still skateboard. I was like,
yeah.
And they want to have a band where everybody still skates. And I said, well,
can I bike?
I'm like, look, I don't skateboard anymore because I know damn well I'm going to fall off that f-ing thing and break my hands. And
yeah.
I won't be going on tour. So I was like, even though it was my idea, I think you're going to have to find another guitar player to be in your skate rock band. So maybe I could be the manager or something.
There you go. Just as long as it's not a rollerblading themed thrash band.
No, none of that for me. Nothing wrong with that, but that's not my thing.
Right on, man. Well, again, Weight of the False Self, new Hatebreed album. Frank, thanks so much for taking the time.
I appreciate it, and I'm sorry I called you late, and I appreciate you the interview and plugging the record, and hopefully we'll get back out to Seattle soon.
Absolutely, man. Have a good one, and have a good day at the record store.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass. You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.